And greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news. Stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your humble host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought here on the World Wide Web, unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media. We go worldwide to a worldwide audience. Welcome aboard this week, and I'm wondering, that South Korean ship that sunk, I mean, it seems not only to have sunk, but to have fallen off the edge of the planet. I mean, I haven't seen word one about it. And I honestly didn't get to read enough about it to know what was going on. But last time I checked, the world is not flat. So it couldn't have fallen off the edge of the planet, could it? I just don't know. Maybe the other shoe will drop there and we'll find out what's going on. I mean, I suppose military ships blow up and sink in disputed waters all the time, I suppose, and then they fall off the edge of the world, apparently. It's just weird. I was looking for stories on that, and I frankly couldn't find much of anything. So we'll just have to move on. I'm also wondering, as we start the broadcast this week, why is it that the Republicans are so animated by the socialization of the 50% of health care that was free market? I mean, half of healthcare was already socialized to begin with, for crying out loud. Why is it that this healthcare debate has animated them so? Meanwhile, the systematic dehumanization and murder of an entire class of people for a generation was fit only as a fundraising tool for our good friends in the Republican Party. Perhaps I'll bring that up. I know, Alexis. It makes me want to cry, too. How do you really feel? Yeah, I know. Perhaps I'll bring that up at my county Republican convention or whatever it is they have. Don't cry for me, Alexis. I'll be okay. All right. So what is the deal with that? Anyway, it's just disturbing. All right. So let's jump right in. There's a lot to do. First, from the Yeah Right file, Dateline Dubai from the Reuters Wire, Osama bin Laden in a fresh audio tape threatened to execute any Americans taken prisoner by Al-Qaeda if accused September 11th, mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is executed. That was reported on Al Jazeera Television. Just a memo to Osama bin Laden's press agent. That's Al Jazeera Television. And if you really want to come across as credible, Mr. bin Laden, you should really roll some videotape. Anyway, you all know my position on Osama bin Laden's position, somewhere beneath the sands of Afghanistan. So we'll just jump right into the domestic tranquility file. It was neglected last week for a lack of time. It shall not be this week. Dateline Woodbridge, Virginia. The drivers of a Jaguar and a dump truck engaged in a road rage duel on a Virginia interstate that included shots fired by the driver of the Jaguar. Yes. After the dump truck merged onto Interstate 95 last Tuesday afternoon, the driver sparred aggressively with the dump truck, hitting the Jaguar twice and both ending up against the shoulder wall. The 25-year-old driver of the Jag, Gabriel, fellow named Gabriel, he got out of his car and fired 13 shots, hitting the dump truck four times. So first, the first thing I'm thinking is, he fired 13 shots at a dump truck and he only hit it four times? I mean, for crying out loud. That is, I mean, talk about the broadside of a barn. We're talking about a dump truck here. It's a dump. Anyway, I don't understand it all. Anyway, the dump truck driver, 44-year-old James Brigham, is charged with reckless driving. And the driver of the Jaguar thankfully can't shoot straight, so nobody was really hurt. But that's the state of road rage, at least in the state of Virginia there. Now let's move on. Dateline Seattle, Washington, from the Domestic Tranquility File. Oh, I hate these stories. I hate these stories. King County, Washington prosecutors filed a charge of first-degree murder last Friday against 41-year-old Charles Parsons of Lakewood, Washington. He's being held on $5 million bail. Parsons is accused of killing 38-year-old Carol Parsons, his ex-wife, last Wednesday at Calvary Lutheran Church. Now, the couple, according to the AP, divorced a year ago, and Charles Parsons wanted to reconcile, but his ex-wife did not. Carol Parsons was shot 5 times after she told her ex-husband that she would not end a relationship with another man. So here we are in a culture that tolerates sexual immorality and divorce on demand, no-fault divorce. And, well, it's costing people their lives, frankly, and things need to change. What a horrible story. But that's, well, listen to this. Dateline Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. What's going on in Philadelphia? I mean, are the wackos and crazy criminals just taking advantage of the fact that Philadelphia stands for brotherly love? And so they just import as many maniacs as they can into Philadelphia just so the name will be ironic? I mean, it's just scary. Philadelphia police have arrested an 11-year-old boy on assault charges for allegedly accosting a woman at a playground. Authorities charged the boy with aggravated assault, conspiracy, and robbery. Another 12-year-old girl has already been charged in the attack. Police say the youths were part of a group that surrounded and attacked the woman last Friday night. Neighborhood kids told police that the attack was part of a game called Catch and Wreck. Young kids attacking old women in a game. Brotherly love indeed. I think not. Tragedy. And these are the children that you think are going to pay for your health care? I think not. All right, a new file has developed here at the Weekly Worldview, and it's called the Financial File. That's right. Because, well, finances have become of interest to me, frankly, because I have none, and of interest to many people in the country because they appear to believe, a vast majority of people appear to believe, that our economic system could collapse and is perhaps even on the verge of collapse. So we'll go to New York City, Dateline Manhattan, the exchange Bar and Grill in Gramercy Park. Customers can move prices for all beverages and bar snacks. The prices will fluctuate in 25-cent increments. For example, a glass of Guinness starts at $6 but could be pushed to a high of $8 or a low of $4, depending on the popularity of Guinness that day. If one drink is in heavy demand, its price will rise, causing the cost of other equivalent drinks to drop. The owners admit that the stock exchange theme is a gimmick. Yeah, they admit it's a gimmick, but I find it interesting. Someday, very soon, it may be a reminder that there was a time in America when we actually had a free market. And if the exchange bar and grill outlasts the Obama administration, perhaps we'll have a model upon which we can rebuild a free market economy. And boy, will we need a drink. All right, deeper into the financial file. Don't get bored. I know it's finances, but don't get bored. Does the health care law signal the decline of the U.S. empire? This is a report from David Murren, the co-founder of the Emergent Asset Management Hedge Fund. And he spoke with CNBC last week. And he noted that in empires, in their expansionary phase, they force people to go out, seek risks, and fend for themselves. After the war, he points out, the World War II, when the National Health Service, which ensured universal health coverage in Britain, was created, Britain's decline began. So asserts David Murren over at Emergent Asset Management. He says, quote, "This empire decline is actually a dead set course that societies get into, and it will happen very quickly, I'm afraid. As you start to build a system, it becomes cohesive because of its success. The fractures in the American system, I think, are more apparent than ever. And then he warned China's rise will be much faster than most people anticipate. So this goes back to my old axiom. Well, it's not an old axiom, but an axiom it is. Christianize China and they'll dominate the globe for the next 1,000 years. Don't Christianize China and they'll dominate the globe for the next 1,000 years. So is the empire in decline? Well, let's go to Las Vegas from Mike, the Vegas Economist. And that's not a newspaper or a report or a website. It's actually Mike, the Vegas Economist, who happens to be a contributor to the broadcast. And he points out that the spread between market rates for a federally backed mortgage and a federally backed T-bill are the lowest ever recorded. The spread, he says. So here's what he points out. A 30-year mortgage right now is available at a rate of 5%. A 30-year T-bill traded on March 23rd at 4.71%. So the spread between them is just 0.29%. And Mike, the economist in Las Vegas, believes that this is the lowest ever recorded. He says, about 20 months ago, I, Mike, the Vegas economist, predicted this convergence of interest rates, and I also predicted there would be no inflation. While every expert and pundit alike on TV and radio predicted out-of-control inflation and interest rates going high, I predicted the opposite. He said they predicted that the result of this government spending spree was going to be out-of-control inflation and interest rates going through the roof. He said Jimmy Carter's name was used constantly, along with the term misery index, to let us know what we were in for. And so, Mike the Economist, you got me on this one, I must confess, Mike, because I, for the life of me, can't understand what's going on. And that's why we turn to the wisdom of the Vegas Economist. But, Mike says, my predictions are based on very simple reasoning. Pelosi, Reid, and their Pied Piper Obama hoped, with all their collectivist hearts, that they would create inflation with their stimulus package, and this inflation would be their savior as it monetized their debt. And now, without inflation, they put their hopes in taxing the rich. But once again, their hopes will be dashed as the money they wish to confiscate will vanish, for the laffer curve will once again have the last laugh, says Mike. Very soon, the government will be at their borrowing end. They will be backed into a corner, and they will, of course, literally go out of their minds when they realize their fate, and they will steal, cheat, default, and do everything and anything to keep spending. They may try to nationalize the banks to create their own money, but they will fail in this effort as well, as bankers are just too smart and too powerful to let that happen. And that's where Mike leaves us this week, ladies and gentlemen, on the edge of our seats, wondering, well, Mike, then what is going to happen? And I'm not so sure even the sage economist of Las Vegas, Mike, knows. But you heard it here first, and I'm willing to admit that Mike has been right, and I have been wrong. And I don't like to admit that. Nobody likes to admit they're wrong. But we shall see how things unfold, and we certainly do appreciate the input of the contributor out there in beautiful Las Vegas. No, I believe it's fabulous Las Vegas. I apologize for that. I'm going to take a sip of lemon lift tea as my pipes are still recovering. It seems like they've been recovering for 5 weeks, but please bear with me because I am a fella who plays hurt, okay? Here we go from the financial file. The bond vigilantes are finally flexing their muscles. A long period of stability for the U.S. government bond market showed signs of cracking this week as a lack of investor appetite for new debt sent the benchmark 10-year yield to its highest level since June. Mike was right. Analysts have been warning that the record-sized deficit sales by the U.S. Treasury were at odds with a 10-year yield sitting comfortably below 4%. What did Mike point out? Oh, 4.71%. Last Friday, it was 3.87, and Mike pointed out on the 23rd it was 4.71. The term bond vigilantes was coined in the 1980s when bond investors pushed up long-term yields to force central banks into taking action to curb inflation. This time, says the Financial Times, bond investors are less worried about inflation. They are fretting about huge fiscal deficits and the looming bond supply needed to finance them. Everyone thought we would see rising rates due to higher inflation, but it appears the bond vigilantes are demanding a higher real rate. And so, maybe Mike in Las Vegas is a bond vigilante. Maybe he's a part of it. I doubt it. I don't know that Mike is a bond vigilante, but he's certainly an astute observer of things financial. One more from the financial file before we go to break. Portugal. Portugal's credit grade has been cut by Fitch Ratings for the first time. The rating was lowered one step to AA with a negative outlook. Underperformance this year, according to Bloomberg, or in 2011, may lead to another downgrade. And you know what happens when you get downgraded? You have to pay more interest on your debt. Now, the U.S. is still holding at a AAA rating with a positive outlook. But how much longer can that last before we follow Portugal? Douglas Renwick, associate director at Fitch, wrote that, quote, a sizable fiscal shock of relative macroeconomic and structural weaknesses has reduced Portugal's credit worthiness. By the way, folks, Mr. Renwick points out in this Bloomberg article that Portugal's deficit is 9.3% of their gross domestic product. Now, in 2009, the U.S. deficit was 9.9% of GDP. And it's projected in 2010 that the U.S. deficit will be 11+% of GDP. So bond vigilantes, socialists in the White House, Democrats who are hell-bent on destroying the country, and Republicans who are positioning themselves to benefit in the next election. Put all them aside and try to imagine what could possibly be in store if we follow Portugal. And by the way, folks, Venezuela's deficit is 5.4% of their gross domestic product, and they've already sold out. I mean, the socialists are already in control of Venezuela. So what could be next? Time since I could figure out what was going on with all of this. I mean, I'm confused. What can I say? Take me on back, baby, where I come from. Anyway, so that was a nice, happy interjection of some rock and roll there. But let's move on now into the personhood file. I've got an article here from CNN. What's behind the celebrity baby obsession? Yeah. CNN tells us that the children of celebrities are now just as famous as their parents. What's behind this baby obsession? And what's with all these celebrities suddenly wanting to have babies and then very publicly having babies and then displaying them as if they were accessories? There's even a new website, babycelebrityscoop.com. No, Celebrity Baby Scoop. I don't want to give them any press. Anyway, CNN wonders what's behind this baby obsession. And it's real simple, CNN. Babies are good, and they're cute, and they're fun, and they're a joy. People love babies, generally speaking. Even though we live in a culture that insists that babies are a deficit, they're a net loss, that's hard, and it's pregnancy is akin to a disease, which they have a treatment for, by the way. Even though the culture for 40 years has said that the right to kill babies is good and it's a constitutional right that we should all stand up and cheer and be proud of, the bottom line is people still like babies. You just can't get past that. And it doesn't matter if it's Tom Cruise's baby or Doug McBurney's baby. People like babies. I don't know why CNN... It's probably this post-Christian female writer over at CNN is probably just perplexed. What's the deal with everyone liking babies so much? Anyway, pretty simple answer. Thank you very much. You don't have to be a real deep thinker to figure that one out. All right, here we go. On to the personhood file right from the Babies Are Good file. The personhood amendment will return to the Colorado ballot. On Friday night, the Colorado Secretary of State ruled that, the 46,000 signatures that Personhood Colorado gathered in just 15 days did put them over the top. And the Secretary of State says there are now enough signatures to put the measure on the ballot. It will appear as Amendment 62, the right thing to do. That's right. Or what's our unofficial slogan? Woohoo! 62. Anyway, organizers, according to 9 News in Denver, organizers for the Personhood Colorado campaign say they will approach this election differently from the one in 2008. And here's a quote from, who's this from? Doug McBurney, a director with Personhood Colorado. He says, quote, "The campaign will be a little different this year in that we'll be more confrontational. We want to confront the media and the politicians with the indisputable evidence for the God-given right to life of every person." He says that Personhood Colorado will focus on a grassroots campaign, going door-to-door to voters. They will also utilize the media to get their message out. Information about abortion, including images of what abortion is, will be part of that message. They will also include images and stories of children who were adopted as embryos and raised by their adopted families. So here, people asked me after I said that, they were like, "Doug, isn't that a bit, I mean, you're saying indisputable evidence, that's kind of tough." Well, if you go to 9news.com, you'll see pictures of a dozen or more children who in some cases were FedExed across the country as two-celled frozen embryos. And now look at them and tell me that's not a person. And then go back, dial it back, go into the Wayback Machine and dial it all the way back to that FedEx box and tell me when did that person become a person. It's indisputable evidence. Ladies and gentlemen, as if we needed any. Anyway, then they, Nine News quotes someone who works for Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains. By the way, as a director for Personhood Colorado, I am uncompensated. In fact, it costs me money, and I'm glad. But this, they quote someone who's a paid spokes dyke for Planned Parenthood, so I'm not going to quote her because she obviously has an interest, a biased interest in the debate. But I think there's another quote here, again, from Doug McBurney, director at Personhood Colorado. He says, quote, "The culture, the educated elite, the media, all tell the citizens that abortion is a right. So we need to start by changing the law. That is the goal. This is not an academic exercise. We intend to win," unquote. At which point, the crowd went wild. All right. So that's the personhood file. We're on the march. By the way, personhood is also gathering signatures right now in Florida, California, and Montana. And we are engaged in an epic legal struggle with Planned Parenthood and the ACLU in Nevada, Missouri, and Alaska. So you know when Planned Parenthood and the ACLU both team up to file lawsuits against you, you know that you are working for the forces of light against the forces of darkness. That's right. You can tell a lot about someone by who their enemies are. That's encouraging news from the personhood file. But now, not to discourage you too much, let's move on to the politics file. A headline screams from the Daily Mail in London. Almost a quarter of Republicans think Obama may be the Antichrist. Yeah. According to the Daily Mail, more than half of the Republicans quizzed by a Harris poll, 57%, believe the president was secretly a Muslim And about 25% believe that he may be the Antichrist. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know if I've ever told people my Antichrist theory. I have one, and it's been roundly criticized on theological grounds, but I'm going to posit it anyway for your entertainment. I believe that the spirit of Antichrist has existed on the planet since Jesus walked the earth. It's always been here. And there have always been individuals operating under that spirit, which is, you know, any spirit that's in rebellion and in conflict with God and his will, that's the spirit of Antichrist. Jesus was the embodiment of the will of God, Jesus Christ, and Antichrist is the embodiment on earth of the will against God, and that's the will of not only Satan, but the will of man, selfish men. So I think that the spirit and the individuals have always been here, and any one of them have been in a position to meet the descriptions as laid out in the book of Revelation. They've always been there, and it's simply an event that will take place, I believe, that will cause the Antichrist to be revealed, and I think it's the removal of the Spirit of God via his body, which is you and I, if you're a Christian. If you're not, you're with Antichrist. You and I, once we're removed from the scene and the Spirit of God is removed from the earth, then whoever happens to be in power is going to meet all the descriptions that you see in Revelation, and all that's going to happen, and so anyway, I don't spend a lot of time looking for the Antichrist. Although, I don't generally harshly criticize anyone who does. And Barack Hussein Obama qualifies as much as, the next guy, I suppose, operating in that spirit. All right, now let's move on. I don't want to get too theological and lose the audience here. From the Culture File, from the Associated Press, a dateline of Sacramento, California. When California voters head to the polls in November, they will decide to legalize the recreational use of marijuana for adults. Now, it's not, the article actually says that they're going to have an opportunity to decide whether or not to legalize. One of my bold predictions is that they will legalize recreational marijuana use in California. The state, California, by the way, was the first to legalize medical marijuana. You know, medicine, yeah, back in 1996. By the way, marijuana remains illegal under federal law. I find this ironic that state governors and governments and the people have the will to stand up to the feds and say, no, we want to be stoners. No, we demand our right to be a pothead no matter what the federal government says. Meanwhile, the systematic dehumanization and murder of an entire class of citizens is tolerated as if we can do nothing about it. Well, the times, they are changing, my friend. And I think it was a pothead who wrote that line, if I'm not mistaken. I have no evidence. All right. Legislators in Rhode Island, by the way, another state, hard hit by the economic downturn, is considering a plan to decriminalize possession of dope by anyone 18 years or older, and then they want to tax it. In California, local governments will get to decide whether to permit and tax the sale of dope to morons. Yeah. Proponents of the measure say that legalizing pot could save the state $200 million a year by reducing public safety costs. At the same time, it could generate tax revenue for local governments. A field poll taken in April found a slim majority of California voters supported legalizing and taxing marijuana to help bridge the state budget deficit. What's their deficit out there? A couple of billion dollars? And so the potheads are going to pony up $200 million, you know, of that? And you think it's worth it to legalize the doping of a generation? It's just ridiculous. But that's where the culture is. Yeah. All right, now listen to this from the Isn't That Ironic file. Some residents of Humboldt County, California, worry that their way of life is being threatened, not by law enforcement, but by efforts to legalize marijuana in the state. Yeah, you know Humboldt County, right? It's famous for pot growers, right? And old hippies. If you've ever driven through Eureka, California, I mean, the place is just overrun with worthless hippies. Dirty, smelly, unshaven, unclean hippies. Well, they're worried about the ripple effect. According to the AP, they're worried about the ripple effect that a drop in marijuana prices could have on the county. if legalization undermines their black market. So we've got a quote, an actual quote from a Humboldt County supervisor. He says, dude, we have to recognize that if we have something that is this big a piece of our economy, man, that is subsidized by being illegal, that this is an unsustainable situation. What? What did I just say, man? That's the Humboldt County supervisor basically standing up for illegal drug production as the backbone of the Humboldt County economy, dude. Anyway, they had a big meeting out there in Humboldt County. It was like an Ozzy Osbourne concert. I mean, you walked into it and it hit you in the face like a frying pan. the smoke was wafting through the air there. They had a big meeting anyway. And the organizer of that meeting, Anna Hamilton.
Organizer?
Yeah, they had an organizer. It was loosely organized at best. She said that legalizing marijuana could be devastating to the region and that Humboldt County should plan ahead by capitalizing on its name recognition as a marijuana destination. She says, wait, man, wait. Wait, quote, she says, wait, dude, wait. We have to embrace marijuana tourism, man. Marijuana products, marijuana services. And marijuana, dude, it has to become a part of the Humboldt County brand. I mean, isn't that groovy, dude? So anyway, unquote, I'm sorry. So the Humboldt County government is concerned. And again, from the isn't this even more ironic file, Dateline Sacramento, California. California lawmakers this past week moved a step closer to banning smoking at all state beaches and parks. Anti-smoking groups say that the anti-tobacco bill would make California the first state to ban smoking throughout its entire park system if the bill is signed into law. So talk about irony of ironies. As they legalize marijuana, medical and otherwise, they're going to ban the smoking of tobacco in their state parks. So I wonder if all the fish heads and the deadheads, if they wander into California parks, if this should become law, will they be able to smoke their dope that they bought legally, or perhaps medically, in the park? And will somebody with a pack of camels be hauled off to jail? I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. That last story, that last group of stories, would naturally lead to this story. From the Culture File, Dateline Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, from the Associated Press, state police have charged a central Pennsylvania man with public drunkenness. Yeah. Now, that doesn't happen very often, right? Public drunkenness? Well, listen to what happened. Several witnesses saw 55-year-old Donald Wolf near a dead possum along Route 36 in Oliver Township, Pennsylvania, last Thursday at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which last time I checked was broad daylight. One person saw Mr. Wolf kneeling down before the dead possum and gesturing as though he was conducting a seance, while another witness reports that he saw Mr. Wolf giving mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to the dead possum on the side of the highway. Troopers say Wolf was, quote, extremely intoxicated, unquote. And they also say that he did have his mouth in the area of the dead animal's mouth. Yeah. Now, all I want to say to this, folks, is every addict has a moment when they reach and scrape the bottom of the barrel and they realize that it's time to make a significant change in their life. Now, most of us hit a bottom that's at least 3 or 4 degrees above giving a possum mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. By the way, the possum was already experiencing rigor mortis, so the possum wasn't coming back. But anyway, every addict has that moment. Most of us tend to not get to this level, but can everyone just say a prayer this week for 55-year-old Donald Wolf? Let's pray that this is his moment, that that he will realize that it's probably time to leave that sauce alone, okay? I mean, that's just sad. All right, now, on into the war file. New guidelines for how the military enforces its don't ask, don't tell, don't seek, don't smell policy. Raise the bar on who or what can initiate an inquiry into allegations of misconduct by a gay or lesbian service member. I found this interesting. They've raised the guidelines. They've raised the bar, I should say, on who or what can initiate. Are they trying to include gender indeterminate people, who or what, so that a man could initiate an inquiry, a woman, or someone who's just of indeterminate gender? That would fall in the what category. And it appears that's not the case, but that's how I read it initially. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates announced the new policies, saying the changes will provide, quote, a greater measure of common sense and common decency to a process for handling what are difficult and complex issues for all involved, unquote. This is our Secretary of Defense concerning himself with handling difficult and complex issues regarding men who, well, I mean, girls who, you know, Mr. Gates, these are not complex or difficult issues. In fact, they're frankly pretty darn disgusting. And, you know, faggots should not be serving in the U.S. military. Okay, and I say that as a military veteran, so I think I come to the table with some qualifications. Probably not the qualifications of a fellow like Robert Gates. I'm sure that his military background is illustrious and well-documented. But not only should homosexuals not be allowed to serve in the military, but men and women should not be serving in close quarters in the military for a lot of the same reasons, but they're not as disgusting. Anyway, so the don't ask, don't tell, don't seek, don't smell policy continues, but it is a friendlier and more humane policy, according to Bill Gates, Barack Obama, and all the good people over at ABC News. And that's just sad. I mean, as a veteran, it pains me to see our military turned into a social experiment, a cesspool of social experimentation and other types of experimentation that I frankly don't want to go into. Yeah. Let's just leave that aside. Let's move on deeper into the war file. The war file is kind of thick this week. And we are rapidly running out of time. I'll have to move quickly. Please listen quickly as well. Can you name that anti-Zionist? Here we go. Here's a quote from a Financial Times story. Can you name that anti-Zionist? The conflict with the Palestinians and with Israel's Arab neighbors threatens Israel's long-term future. Here's another quote. The inexorable mathematics of demography are hastening the hour at which the Israelis may have to choose between preserving their democracy and staying true to the dream of a Jewish homeland. Have you figured out who the anti-Zionist is yet? Here's another quote. For 6 decades, the Israelis have guarded their borders vigilantly,
But advances in rocket technology mean that Israeli families are now at risk, far from those borders.
Okay, still haven't figured it out. I have one more quote.
This is about getting to the table, creating and protecting an atmosphere of trust around it, and staying there until the job is done.
Obama. It's not Barack Obama. It's not Saddam Hussein. It's not Muammar Gaddafi. It's not Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. It's not Prince, whatever his name is, of Jordan. Or King What's-His-Face of Saudi Arabia. No. Or Minister Muhammad Abdulmadad from wherever. Okay? Crapistan, as Michael Savage likes to say. It's none of the above. All those quotes are from Hillary Rodham Clinton, Secretary of State of You were close. I will give you that. By the way, I this last quote that she wants to get around the table and stay there until the job is done, I'm just afraid that the job that Rodham is talking about is the division of Jerusalem, establishment of a terrorist state within Israel, and the, well, I mean, laying the groundwork for the destruction of our only real reliable ally in a volatile region. And by the way, the birthplace of Jesus Christ and Christianity. So I just wanted to throw that in. Seems Hillary has lost sight of that fact. Doesn't surprise me, though, since she's not a Christian. All right. Now, deeper into the war file. What do I want to do first here? Well, I'll do this one first. From Guwahati, India, from the Associated Press, after conducting tests, the Indian military has decided to use the thumb-sized boot jalokia, or ghost chili, to make tear gas and hand grenades to immobilize suspects. That's right, they want to weaponize the world's hottest chili pepper. Have you heard of this one? The boot jalokia. Listen to this. The balut jalokia was accepted by the Guinness Book of World Records in 2007 as the world's spiciest chili pepper. It has more than 1 million Scoville units. Now, just so you get an idea, Tabasco sauce ranges from 2,500 to about 5,000. Jalapenos, the top end, is 8,000. Yeah. So the Indian military says that a chili grenade has been found fit for use after trials in Indian defense laboratories. Now, how fun must have that been? Testing a chili grenade. Anyway, what do they have to say? R.B. Srivastava, who's the director of Life Sciences Department at the New Delhi headquarters of the Indian Defense Department, he says, quote, "This is definitely going to be an effective non-toxic weapon because its pungent smell can choke terrorists and force them out of their hideouts." Well, you know, when it comes to terrorists, Mr. Buhuta Hadstrava, I'm really for using real grenades, if at all possible. But I kind of like the idea of a chili grenade. I'm okay with that. And if it improves and increases production of the Bahut Jaloti chili pepper, maybe we can get some around here. All right. One more from the war file. I wanted to end on a happy note. This is from CNN, from the Mukur district in Afghanistan, in Ghazni province. Beautiful, fabulous Ghazni province in Afghanistan. A suicide attacker, who authorities believe was from Pakistan's Waziristan area, was spotted by locals in his explosive vest. And what did the locals do? The local people intervened, pelted the man with stones and slashed him with knives, and were able to kill the man and bring the suicide vest to the police. Praise the Lord. That's the best news we've heard from the front in Afghanistan. Now, we have not heard yet if any of these civilians have yet been arrested and charged by the U.S. military for violating the rules of engagement. Hopefully that won't. Hate to see those guys, those poor Ghazni province heroes go on trial next to the Marines who are on trial for killing the enemy. Anyway, best news we've seen from the war in quite a while. So let's start quickly in the justice file. Not sure where. Here we go. Let's start with this before the break here. A story from the Telegraph over in London. What is the deal? Are there only reporters in London anymore who are reporting things that are interesting? I mean, I do my fair share of AP stories, but it seems like all the really interesting stories are from the British newspapers. Perhaps because they still teach English over there. I don't know. Anyway, interesting. Listen to this. Researchers believe technology could be used to determine a computer typist's age, sex, and culture within 10 keystrokes by monitoring their speed and rhythm. And you ask yourself, Doug, why is that interesting? Well, listen, Professor Roy Maxion, associate professor at Newcastle University, has been carrying out research over there in England. I'm sorry, in America. He and Phil Butler, the former Northumbria police detective, chief inspector, believe new technology could be useful in tracking down online fraudsters and child predators. Mr. Butler said, quote, Roy's research has the potential to be a fantastic tool to aid intelligence gathering for crime-fighting agencies. He says if children are talking to each other online, we're looking at ways of providing the chat room moderators with the technology to be able to see whether an adult is on there by the way they type. Mr. Butler said the technology could also be used to prevent convicted offenders from committing further crimes. He says, quote, with this technology, the courts could force the offender to provide an example of their typing as a way of ensuring they don't use a computer, unquote. So interesting, very interesting that this technology could exist. And then the research, as far as a crime prevention tool, is fascinating. But I can't help but think that our broken justice system here in the Western world generally has caused some of the greatest minds in technology to have to waste their time trying to figure out how to stop child predators and criminals online. You know, the liberals and those that are fooled by them, which is, I think Mr. Butler and Mr. Maxion, I think they're fine fellows, and I think they're doing great work. But they fall into the category of people fooled by the liberals and forced to make a living doing things that shouldn't have to be done because the liberals have destroyed the justice system. You see, liberals and people fooled by them work hard to make it so you can't commit a crime. They work hard to make it so you can't. But conservatives and people who are wise build a justice system that makes it so you won't. We are rounding third and headed to home, and we're going to come right back with a Bible verse. Warning, 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 Will Robinson. There are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone who would ever dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered from the book of Romans in the 13th chapter. Paul tells us, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. So for all of you out there in the audience who are familiar with the Bible and you think that in the New Testament that Jesus got very mushy and nice and said he's going to forgive everybody and there's no more death penalty? Well, here we are in Romans. And if you have any idea of the chronology of the New Testament, you'll know that Paul was the apostle that came after Jesus Christ had ascended into heaven. Jesus had departed from the scene at this point, temporarily. He was in heaven. And Paul was his minister on earth. And it doesn't sound here like Paul was indicating that God had gone into therapy or whatever and rescinded the death penalty. All right. So that's how you build a system where people won't commit crimes, rather than hiring geniuses to waste their time making it so you can't. All right. Let's move on into the justice file. Dateline Huntsville, Texas. Normally we go there for good news. It's not so good this week. The U.S. Supreme Court last Wednesday stopped the execution of condemned prisoner Hank Skinner about an hour before he was to be taken to the Texas death chamber. Skinner asked the court and Governor Rick Perry for the delay for DNA testing that he insisted could clear him in a triple murder. The order grants him the delay, but does not ensure he'll get such testing. So this murderer, Hank Skinner, he's convicted murderer. He's gotten a reprieve. Listen to this. He's 47 years old. He faced lethal injection for the bludgeoning and strangling of his girlfriend and the stabbings of her two adult sons. The slayings occurred at their home in the Texas Panhandle town of Pampa, Texas, on New Year's Eve, 1993. That's so long ago that a lot of the people I work for down in the personhood office, I mean, they weren't even born in 1993. And this guy still sits on death row. Well, listen to this. Skinner, splattered with the blood of at least two of the victims, was arrested about 3 hours after the bodies were found. Police found him hiding in a closet at the trailer home of a woman he knew. So if he's not guilty, why was he hiding? Well, he says, wait a minute. He has a story, okay? The former oil field and construction worker said that he was present when the three were killed, but he couldn't have committed the murders. He says a combination of vodka and codeine left him passed out on a couch and physically incapable of clubbing the one man 14 times with an axe handle, the woman 14 times, and then stabbing her sons. He says, I was too drunk to kill, right? So obviously he passed out on the couch and someone else came in, possibly the same fellow O.J. Simpson is currently looking for, right? When was that, 95? This could be the same maniac that splattered all that blood all over O.J. Simpson, splattered blood all over poor, hapless Hank Skinner, drunk, stoned, whacked out, passed out on the couch, just minding his own business. When somebody came in and splattered that guy blood all over me. Anyway, he said that I've been framed ever since. He says they're fixing to kill me for something I didn't do. So, I mean, I'm not saying I'm against DNA testing. I mean, I'm for it. And if it proves someone is not guilty, then, with the amount of murders prosecuted in this country today, it wouldn't surprise me that mistakes are made. And with the general incompetence of government workers and the general devious untrustworthiness of lawyers, innocent people perhaps are being convicted. So why don't we clean it all up? We'll run DNA tests for everyone if you pass. And if there's no other credible evidence and you are truly determined to be innocent, we will let you go. If not, we are going to execute you. And we need to start this program like the day after tomorrow, okay? And let's get on with it. Because the justice system, not only should they not kill people who don't deserve to die, but they should not let people live who do not deserve to live. That's in the Bible as well. Google it. Look it up. I'm not going to quote every chapter and verse for you. I'm just a talk show host. All right. More from the justice file, the injustice file, I should say. The bodies of Minnit and Jasmine Bowman were discovered in a locked freezer in September of 2008. Authorities searched the house after a third sister escaped and was found wandering the neighborhood. Investigators concluded that the mother, Renee Bowman, had killed the girls months before, locked the bodies in the freezer. After the girls died, she continued to collect subsidies paid to adoptive parents of special needs children She received about a total of about $150,000 after she adopted these special needs girls, murdered them, and put the bodies in a freezer. A jury convicted Bowman last month of 2 counts of first-degree murder and 3 counts of first-degree child abuse. And Bowman had earlier pleaded guilty to a child abuse and was sentenced to 25 years. And last Monday was sentenced to 2 consecutive life terms plus 75 years, the maximum allowed by Maryland law. So butchers children, locks them in a freezer, steals money from the government, and is sentenced to live. That's the injustice file. Dateline, Santa Ana, California, from the Associated Press. An Indiana man has been sentenced to 25 years to life in California prison for the 1985 murder of a single mother in Anaheim. A Wendell Patrick Lemond of Indianapolis was found guilty in July. On August 5th, 1985, the victim was assaulted and killed in her apartment while her 2-year-old son was bound and left in another room. The child gave a statement to the court before last Friday's sentencing saying that Wendell Patrick Lemond, murderer, had deprived him of growing up with a mother. And in the face of that testimony, the justice system in California sentenced this murderer to live. Detectives, by the way, used DNA to link Lemon to the murder in 2007, but Lemon will never demand DNA testing because they're not going to execute the bastard, although they should. He has been sentenced to live. Dateline, Saginaw, Michigan. Saginaw, Michigan, I said. Oh, I really hate these. Angela Blackwell of Saginaw Township was jailed last Wednesday. She was charged with letting a 67-year-old man have... Let's just say she was charged with letting a 67-year-old man have a 10-year-old girl she was caring for in exchange for cocaine. Police are searching for the man, Johnny Griffin. If convicted, the pair could face 25 years in prison. They will be sentenced to live after they have stolen the life of a 10-year-old girl. They should not live. Griffin had the girl between September and February of 2010. That's how long this went on. This wasn't one incident. And at worst, they could be sentenced to live. Outrageous. One more from the justice file. I know it's kind of depressing, so we want to end on not such a depressing note. A Florida man has been sentenced to 15 years in prison for trying to break back into the jail where he had been held following his conviction on manslaughter. He apparently, this fellow, Sylvester Giles, a 25-year-old punk, had been released on probation from the jail a week before the break-in. He apparently feared violent reprisals from family members of the person he killed. Yeah. So he was afraid that he was going to get justice. So he went back to a place where he knew justice would not be served and he would be protected from justice. And that was the unjust criminal jail where he was held. And I'm not against jail altogether. I think it's a fine place to hold someone before and during a trial. But afterwards, there is no place for warehousing human beings. Their punishment must be swift, and they must be dispensed with. All right, don't lose hope, America. Not only is personhood on the ballot. Dateline, Fall River, Massachusetts. Police say a 66-year-old Massachusetts woman fought off a man trying to abduct her by bashing him in the face repeatedly with a rock and forcing him to flee with blood pouring from his wounds, at which point the crowd went wild. The woman was warned by another person about a suspicious vehicle near a park early last Sunday afternoon, so she picked up a fist-sized rock for protection. She was scared. Well, minutes later, a man grabbed her and tried to drag her into his car. The victim kicked the would-be kidnapper and struck him several times with the rock, bloodying his face, at which time he fled the scene. The case remains under investigation. From what we understand, the district attorney is not considering charges against the woman. So, all is not lost. Where there is life, there is hope. And where there is hope, there is the Weekly Worldview, keeping our finger on the pulse of conservative talk on the World Wide Web. I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank KGov, KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life, Theology Online, and as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.